Endurance produces character, character produces hope, and hope does not disappoint us. That there is some wisdom right there in that text, worthy of journaling down, tattooing on your arm, or keeping on a post-it note on your fridge, front door, computer screen to begin each of your days. Hope does not disappoint us. I also sometimes wonder, if I'm honest, if this is the kind of wisdom that we should celebrate, highlight, or parrot when we share the good news of faith with others. As if we're not sure about boasting about our sufferings, if it plays well in the hospital ward, or schools, or anywhere really in 2019, where inward and outward suffering seems all too prevalent. I know of a colleague in seminary who once tried to force the issue, however, when he was a chaplain in the Princeton healthcare system. He told a mother who had just received a terminal diagnosis that her sufferings were for gain and for the glory of God. He was promptly told to get the bleep out of the room. About 3 years ago, our last remaining circle was sitting in the reception room doing a Bible study on just this passage. And as I sat and listened to Betsy and Sally, Nancy and Antonia, Taylor, Jean and Dolores all struggle and criticize Paul's point of emphasis on suffering for gain. In the end, I affirmed their struggle, saying that it would indeed be monstrous for God to want any of us to suffer. Yeah, how do we explain it? God created all things and we suffer nonetheless. Why? For hope? For change? I said to them, hope alone can't change everything. Even the most hopeful among us are sometimes run over by society or blown away by Mother Nature before we even have the chance to change. Admittedly, that last bit wasn't very helpful for them, and it was probably in the mood. And the ministers go through those too. About 3 days ago, I met with three of my original junior high schoolers at Cape and Chestnut Hill for brunch. I seriously have the best job. All in their 20s now, 12 years. All in their 20s and matured by life, we had an earnest conversation about regrets and accomplishments, hardships and victories, hopes and fears. In truth, we talked enough to produce a short educational series, and if everything falls into place, we might do just that. I'm serious. These 20-year-olds now want to create a conduit for younger teens so that they can share their experiences with them and teens that are younger can ask them questions about what college is like, what is growing up in high school like, all those questions. They are wonderful, beautiful people. All three of them, however, have at one time or several been assaulted by the circumstances of life. The medical, the emotional and the interpersonal, each of these three kids, these three adults, have or are going through their own bit of suffering, and yet all of them affirm without question that the valleys in their life were in some way important to walk through so to generate who they are today and who they hope to become tomorrow. So as a result, after a couple hours, we concluded that both views on tribulation hold merit. But first and foremost, using their words, suffering sucks. It just sucks. It is so often arbitrary and unfair that to boast of your suffering would be irrational, even if somewhat sinful, as it would then diminish the harsher realities that others face. But secondly, for those of us who are fortunate to be on the other side, on the side of healing and restoration, it's by first getting lost in those labyrinths of pain that you can ultimately emerge stronger on the other side in the end. So maybe then the best approach is not to celebrate others in despair, but the champion of wisdom that at least in non-terminal and outright terrible situations, one suffering can lead to endurance, and that endurance to character, and that character to hope. Jesus said, very truly, I tell you, you will weep, you will mourn, you will have pain, but your pain will turn into joy, and your hearts will rejoice, and no one will then take that joy from you. My friends, this is the very essence of our faith, the beauty of it. It is the medicine for our malady. Before the supernatural questions, before the mystical questions, this faith deals with the real, with the deep, and the substantive. It does not gloss over or varnish this life. It deals head on with tragedy and loss, and never does it seek to sugarcoat it. But it doesn't stop there at loss. Rather, it goes on with what comes next, for it reevaluates, it reconstitutes, it redeems all that we perceive and experience, and in the end, it inspires. Inspired by its root means to breathe in, to inhale the Spirit of God. And that Spirit, God above all others, dilutes the world's sadness with the strongest shock of heavenly hope. That Spirit gives us another chance, another choice, another life. A couple weeks ago, the staff received an email from Martha Abbott about her mom, Barbara Shelley. She said that they were moving Barbara to the third floor in Mather House at the Hill of Whitewash, and she would begin in hospice. I went there for a visit soon thereafter, and another short after that. On that second, I was alone with Barbara, and in that room, to an outsider, one might have looked in and perceived a minister saying his prayers and an old woman with her eyes closed, how sad. But in that room, I wasn't sad. For Barbara and I were at peace because she was at peace. We listened to some jazz. We listened to classical. I held her hand and we talked about my son. And then I read to her, not from the Bible, but from a book on herself called Devoted. 38 extraordinary tales of love, loyalty, and life with dogs. I asked Barbara, are you the dog lover? And the only thing she said to me that visit was an emphatic, oh yes. The only thing, oh yes. So I picked up the book, I flipped through some pages, and I saw a picture that I instantly recognized from some years ago. And it began reading aloud about Shep, the dog, and the subtitle underneath, understanding what it means to heal. It began like this. John Unger and his then fiancée spent 18 months canvassing Wisconsin shelters looking for the perfect dog. Then they laid eyes on Shep, named after the famous state ice cream. They instantly fell in love and adopted him. And Shep was raised in the wild and probably for some nefarious reason was deathly at that point afraid of men. So John, recognizing this, kept his distance for months, but would sleep on the floor with the dog on the opposite side of the room so Shep could begin to become more comfortable with him. And it worked. For years, John and Shep enjoyed that special relationship that probably only dog owners can fully understand. Well, some years later, quite sadly, John and his fiancée split. And John's life fell apart. John's life went down a downward spiral. It spiraled so far down that on one night he went to a lake to kill himself. For some reason unknown to John, he also took his dog with him that night. As he began to walk out into the deep, was about to go under, he looked back at the bank and saw Shep looking at him with, quote, a look he'd never before seen to write that one of that iconic photo which is embedded at the back of your sermon. Shep is now old and was failing with vision and arthritis all throughout his joints. In that photo, you can see that he's lying on John's chest in the same water, in the same lake that almost drowned his owner some years prior. And in that water, all of his dog's aches are soothed away. They stay there for hours, he writes, each and every day. And John would do it onward and forever if only he could. Suffering produces endurance. Endurance produces character, and character produces hope. John responded to this photo that then went viral, saying, I think in today's world we are faced with such heaviness and sadness. We are moving too fast that people look at this photo and say, that's what the world should be like, filled with pause, with compassion, with love, with hope, and people are just longing for it. That's the way I feel about my dog, about Shep. We understand each other. We are compassionate towards each other, and we love each other. He is my world. He is my world. Almost a month ago, my wife and I made the hard decision of putting down our dog, Vincent. He was at the beginning of our relationship, and through every change in our life together, he was my world. Never having a true yard, I would walk my dog 4 times a day, and I missed those walks terribly. A little over a year ago, Vincent began to have seizures, full body 5-minute seizures, bleeding, urinating, the whole thing, crashing into furniture, hurting himself, terrorizing our son with visible nightmares. The seizures intensified in magnitude and frequency, and you could never predict when they were going to come outside. They would usually happen in the middle of the night. It made going to bed peacefully virtually impossible. Vincent then stopped going down the stairs on his own, and so for a couple of months I slept on the recliner with him under my feet for the last 2 weeks of his life. I took off work. I drove around to all of our favorite spots, to all of our parks, to my father's in Jersey, to the beach, to where I grew up like I'd never been there before. We spent almost every minute together, and it was nearly perfect in red, blue, and green. And on May 17th, he died in my arms there on the vet's office, on the floor, in San Diego. And I still see him that way, that last image on the floor. I closed the door behind me. But you know, I wouldn't have done it any other way. It sucked. But it was also right. For his death reminded me to truly number my days, as the old psalmist writes. So to count each day I live with family, with friends, with all of you, as a gift and a blessing. To try new things. To be more adventurous, to live more than to fear. And I think that, in a sense, is a byproduct of endurance. Later that night, with a map my son was using to learn geography in preschool, I pointed to Iowa. I said, Seth, do you remember how I told you about Iowa? I've been preparing him for this day for weeks. You see there in Iowa, a place I've never been. suffering is over and my nighttime anxieties have been cured by relief. There in that field, there are no more stares and no more seizures, no more tears, but just a hope and a dreamscape, a place that I can abandon him still, a matter that my son can put faith in. A field in Iowa, heaven, and a hope for a new earth to come. These are not just pretty fables to unanswerable hardships we as mere mortals face. These are not fictions rooted out of nothing or pure imagination. They are rooted in the hope given to us by the Trinitarian God who wants to send it from heaven down into our flesh in the form of Jesus Christ to know and redeem our pain. And that God still abides with us through the Spirit, such that we are never truly alone, no matter how often we might convince ourselves that we are. Yes, in truth, God's very own word suggests that there will be isolation, that there will be suffering, that there will be sadness, disease, and dying. But that is not the end of the story, nor the promise of this gospel. For as John writes, our pain will be turned into joy, for life has conquered death. My friends, we are then given the choice. Do we become children of darkness, children of despair? Do we become children of light and ambassadors of hope? My friends, do not boast in